unusual that someone would have a...
Why would I Roosevelt go to Tel Aviv, though? I don't understand.
I don't know.
Say about the owner? I don't know.
Why, this is a demonstration or something?
I'm not sure. I don't understand him.
Okay. All righty.
Lots of pleasant stories.
Why, so you suspect that Netanyahu is something more serious?
It sounds like it.
You can never really tell, but usually it's unusual for pneumonia to get admitted to a hospital overnight. That being said, it sounds like he was released rather quickly, so...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Push lame at this one. Okay, I'll wait another minute or so in case...
I know Benjamin was running.
Okay.
Oh, he's eager.
The Shirkazayas from Mount 7-1.
Shirkazayas? So Shirkazayas Lechatchila should be one-third of a hand or one-half of a machine.
A half of a whole big round matzah?
No. If it's a round hand matzah, a third.
A one-third of that. And actually, mark with the balabayas should be marked with the...
Yeah. And if it's a square hand matzah, a machine matzah would be a half.
Half. Okay.
Yeah. Now, b'dor b'dievet, if it's difficult, you can literally cut that in half. One-sixth of a hand and one-fourth of a machine.
Really?
The first matzah is the important, right?
Well, the emes is, it's a complicated discussion, because both for the first matzah and for the apikomen, you want to have the larger shear. For Korach, you can have the smaller share.
Korach has the smaller share. Okay,
Korach can be the smaller share, but for the Afikoman and for the first Masa, you have a double share.
And for Arba Kosos with the first?
So the Arba Kosos, so it actually depends.
Kiddush is the first with the rice.
Kiddush is the rice of Friday night, when it's Friday night.
Oh, like today is tomorrow.
Yeah. So you have to have at least four, the Kos has to have 4 ounces.
Kos?
How
much do you have to drink?
And you have to drink a rove of that.
Rove of four, so over two.
So anything over two, it's fine. Yeah. For the other ones, it's... The kos can be 3.5, and you drink rove of that.
Chalav is a borer, and I was wondering how, when you dip a kos, how do you? A lot of the stuff farmers say, shake it off. But how do you shake it off? It's not a borer, is that?
Well, it's not borer because whatever something on top of something, it's not really mixed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I first seen Central Gordon was talking to him.
From Cleveland?
He says no, we're from Baltimore.
Which other person?
He used to learn with the other Bernstein.
Oh, the other Bernstein, yeah, sure.
He's like a
wow, sure, of course.
So you got to know.
Thank you, that's a long time
ago. He called me in the middle of the street yesterday.
Wow.
You got to know.
David, yeah. Okay. Alrighty, so again, Poches Maholech, we follow Beis Shammai for Pesach. Okay. And we finished at least first time through the Maggid, and next comes the various mitzvahs of eating. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that because those are prate halachas, and I really wanted to get to the rest of the recitation of the Haggadah. But we have al matzilah shadayim, as we always do before we eat bread, with the bracha. And then we have motzi and matzah, hamaitzi and alachilas matzah. And why do we have three matzahs? So again, even though the Velt likes to give reasons, see, the truth is, even the Rishonim did this already, meaning to say, the reasons the Gemara tends to give for these halachas are very matter-of-fact, they're very non-inspirational, so to speak. Later, the Rishonim, the Gaonim, the Rishonim, and certainly the Acharonim like to embellish it. So this concept of the three matzahs, our Kohen Levi B'Yisrael, the Achdus of Am Yisrael, etc., is not the original reason. This was a symbolism given later, just like connecting Karpas to the salt tears of our forefathers in Egypt, which everybody says that is not at all the reason that Chazal give for the Tibur Rishon. But the original reason of the three matzahs is the following. We know that for every Suda of Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have to have Lechem Mishnah. Lechem Mishnah, double bread. This is commemoration of the double portion of man that fell on every Erev of Shabbos and every Erev of Yom Tov, because the man did not fall on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now, so on one hand, that would require two matzahs. And indeed, the Rambam Shita is two matzahs, the Rambam says, two matzahs, Lechem Mishnah. But the problem is, there's also an inyan, that the mitzvah of matzah should be done on lechem oni, the bread of poverty, which means a broken piece of matzah like a poor person would save. So as a result, since on one hand lechem mishnah should be two shlemos, on the other hand lechem oni requires one that's broken, so the Rambam Shita Taka is that because of lechem oni, your lechem mishnah has a broken matzah. The Rambam says one whole and one broken. The Rambam says lechem mishnah and lechem oni work together. But the Rush already brings that our minhag is that we want to have shlemos because of lechem mishnah, and we want to have one broken one for the inyan of lechem oni. And in fact, because as you know, yachatz, we broke the matzah all the way before magid because the Haggadah itself should be recited over lechem oni, right? The bread of affliction, because there's a pun. Oni is affliction and oni is recitation, like aniya. We want the aniya to be over the oni, right? So because of this, we have three, and therefore lechem mishnah and the shavuot. So therefore, again, there are many, many different shitas here, but the basic idea is the following. When you recite hamotzi, you're reciting it, you grab all three matzahs because you're making it on the lechem mishnah, the first and the third. Then you put down the bottom one, let go of the bottom one, and when you make Allah chilas matzah, your ikar kavana should be both for the top and for the middle, because there's a machlokas. Do you make the Allah chilas matzah on the shavura or on the shlema? At that point, you then start eating behaseba, because matzah has to be eaten reclining, and because there is a machlokas, if the kezayis of matzah should be from the shlema or from the prusa, that is where we get the idea of eating two kezayisim, which would add up to a third of a hand's matzah. But again, the third of the hand matzah would be half of that from the top and half of that from the bottom. Or if it's a machine matzah, it would be a half, which means a quarter from the top and a quarter from the middle. Your mitzvahism, yeah. Now, what's interesting is this. What's interesting is that for most of the people around the Seder, they're not going to be eating their kezayis from those matzahs. Now, it is proper that everybody should get, in other words, if I'm conducting a Seder, everybody should get a little piece from top and bottom and then be mashlim the kezayis from other matzahs. But if you think about it, given the fact that mimanavshach, their kezayis, is coming from the box of matzah, not from the whole and the broken, there would be no logical reason. In other words, the chumrah that the mechaber has, that you should eat two kezayisim to get a kezayis from the top and a kezayis from the middle, would only be a chumrah for the person who is eating a kezayis from the top and a kezayis from the middle. It would not be shayach for everybody else who should only eat one kezayis, which would mean, you might argue therefore, that if I'm just a guest and I don't have my own Seder plate, I should just eat a sixth of a hand matzah. Nevertheless, let me explain the cheshbon here. There are actually two different reasons why you're eating a double kezayis. One is because there's a machlokas if your kezayis should be from the whole or from the broken. The other is the shita of the Neid of Yehuda that says all kezayisim are doubled today. Now, the way it works is this. We're machmir on the Neid of Yehuda for a doraisa, but we follow the more megal opinion for drabanans. So therefore, it turns out to be makayim the inyan of a kezayis from the top and from the middle, that's only a drabanan dika inyan, which one you should eat from. So we're somech on the small kezayisim. But to be makayim the mitzvah doraisa of matzah, you have to have a big kezayis. So therefore it turns out, since one big is equal to two small, so when I eat the one big to be makayim the mitzvah of matzah, I also have the two small. But that chumrah, that aspect, is only for the guy conducting the Seder, but everyone else still has to eat a double kezayis to be chayshesh for the shita of the tzlach. Okay, so it's a little complicated, meaning to say, you're eating a large kezias, both to get a kezias from the top and the kezias from the middle, and to have a kezias lechumra for the mitzvah of matzah. So the mesubin, even if you're being mashlim from the rest, you should still eat the so-called double kezias. Yes.
So the person who's running the Seder, they really shouldn't be giving away too much of that matzah, because they have to fulfill it with...
That's correct. They should be meshayer for themselves a kezias from each other. They should be a third of the top and a third of the broken.
Should everyone have hand matzahs, or just the balabos?
Well. I mean, that's a general machlokes. We know that for the mitzvah of matzah, you have to have what is called shmura, matzah that was harvested, we paskin, from the time the Shem mitzvah. And then when the machine matzahs were invented in the 19th century, there was a huge, huge machlokes. Can a machine be considered lishma? Meaning, do you look at the one who operates the machine as having that proper kavana, or no, a machine doesn't have kavana? So that's a huge, huge machlokes, and you know, to this very day. There are some people that say, in terms of chametz, machine matzahs are actually superior. They say the machines can be cleaned better. So some people say, in terms of etzem kashrus for Pesach, that it's not chametz, there are those who say machine is better. But legabe seder, of course, if it's chametz, you're not going to hope for the seder either. But legabe lishma, hand is considered to be a more certainly lishma. Now they say that in the 19th century, a famous tshuva from Rav Chaim of Sanz, who absolutely postled machine matzahs, and he didn't want to give the reason. He said these are for hidden reasons. I don't want to be megala. He said it's not lishma, but he said he has other reasons. He doesn't want to be megala. But the Velt says, the Iker reason was that the main people who used to make matzah were widows, were almanas. Mm. And this was their parnasa. Mm. And he was very, very concerned that the machines would put them out of business. And therefore, but he was willing to trafe all the machine matzahs and the like.
Would there then be a reason for essentially every male over bar mitzvah to have their own set of three matzahs?
There actually is a reason for that. Because that way each person could be Mekayim the Inyan. Now that doesn't mean you have to have a whole Seder plate necessarily, but to have three matzahs in which you have a middle broken matzah. Of course, that'll give the kids a lot of apikomens to find.
Maybe they'll do better
and they'll like it. But that would be an inyan for that. To be Mekayim, the mitzvah min amukhar, which is a drabanan of Shlema and Prusa. Now, for Korach, on the other hand, which is vaday a drabanan, because it's only a commemoration of what Hillel did in the Beis HaMikdash, you can certainly use the smaller rabbinic kezias, which would be 1/6 of a hand's matzah, or 1/4 of a machine matzah. There's no inyan of the double, so-called the double kezias. So Korach is vaday going to be a smaller share. For the afikoman, on the other hand, we also go back to the double kezias, because some shittas say that the ikar mitzvah, the araisa of matzah, is eating it at the end of the meal when you wait the Korban Pesach. So therefore, you do have the double kezias for the afikoman as well. So therefore, the total amount of shmura matzah that one should eat is a third for motzi matzah, a sixth for korech, and a third for afikoman. Okay, that's kind of the way it works. And for a hand matzah, it would be a half, a fourth, and a half. So that's one and a fourth hand, one and a fourth machine matzahs. Yeah.
When he says a third, it means a third plus a third, right? Two thirds, really. And then a sixth, and then two
thirds. No, a third. Because a third is a double kezias already. A third is a double kezias. Yeah, a third is a double kezias.
The moitzi matzah.
So that means you take a sixth from the top and a sixth from the middle. A sixth from the top and a sixth from the middle. So you have a large kezias b'sach hakol, and you have two small kezaisim to be legavi the drub on it. So the truth of the matter is, I mean, listen, this is not a new point. I mean, the shiurim that people eat for matzah is much, much larger than is necessary. Again, the Chazon Ish has much, much larger shiurim, but Rav Moshe and Moshe Shlomo Zalman, even Rabbi Yashub, they all had smaller shiurim. of these things. If one wants to do like the Chazon Ish, you know, that's dumb. I'm not discouraging it. But in terms of minimums, these are the minimums that you have to that you have to have. Matzah is eaten beseba. Then we have maror. Maror, remember, is only midrabanan, because when there's no carbon pesach, maror is drabanan, because the only reference to maror is al matzos umurorim yaychluhu, which is written by the korban pesach. So maror b'zmanas as drabanan. Even though it is drabanan, we still make a bracha, asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu, because that is always the case. On all mitzvos, even midrabanan, we make a bracha, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said in the Torah, Lo yisosor mikol asher yagidu lecha. Do not depart from whatever the Chachamim teach you. Kairach, we know, is simply the way Hillel, right, is the first shawarma, people point out. Because remember, you know, what is it? I mean, after all, it's a lamb, roasted lamb. Pita. Pita was like soft, right? This was soft, bendable matzah, like Svardim have. And some vegetables, right? Some maror in there, right? So this was the first shawarma, first sandwich. So the Earl of Sandwich didn't invent it, or whatever it is. Hillel invented the sandwich because he held al matzah shemorim yechlua is understood very literally. One little word about the kairach, that is, when we recite the paragraph, Zecher l'mikdash kehillel, this is a commemoration of what Hillel did in the Beis HaMikdash. So it quotes the pasuk, Al matzais umarayirim yaychaluhu. Now the emes is, that pasuk is in Parshas Balayscha. And that's talking about Pesach Sheni, that if you're tameh on Pesach, so you can bring a Pesach Sheni. Now, there is a similar pasuk in Parshas Bo by Pesach Rishon that says, Utsliyesh umatzos al mararim yechluhu. So the question is, if we're describing how Hillel fulfilled the Korban Pesach, why do I quote the pasuk of Pesach Sheni? I should quote the pasuk in Parshas Bo, which is Pesach Rishon. Right? Presumably, Hillel normally brought the Korban Pesach Rishon. So the Belzer Rebbe has a nice word. The Belzer Rebbe says that the pshat is this. We're sitting at the meal, and we are yearning, when will we be able to fulfill the Korban Pesach the way Hillel did it? So we don't want to just wait for next year. We want the next opportunity. The next opportunity is not next Pesach. The next opportunity is next month. Because that's not so pashut really. In other words, if the Beis HaMikdash, it's an interesting halachic shaila. If the Beis HaMikdash gets rebuilt between Pesach and Yud Dalet Iyar, do we bring Pesach Sheni? Or no, there was no chiyuv to bring a Korban Pesach Rishon. Right. So that's really a machlokas. That is a machlokas. But the Belzer Rebbe at least wants to say, al pi adrush, that maybe this is our yearning for Geula, that we should be able to bring not only next Pesach, but even Pesach Sheni. And that's why the Pesach al matzais umrorim yachlua. Now, it's brought down in Halacha that since, according to Hillel, you are fulfilling matzah and maror simultaneously when there was a Pesach. So when you made the bracha on matzah and you made the bracha on maror, you have kavana that it also covers the eating of korech. Therefore, l'chatchila, one should not be mafsik bedibor from the time that you washed your hands and you said al tila shadayim, which of course anyway you're not mafsik till you make hamotzi, but you shouldn't speak until after the eating of korech, so that the bracha of achilas matzah and the bracha of maror should go on the korech as well. That's a little bit sometimes hard to do when you have, especially when you have children and this and that. But so lemaisa, if you have to speak because of the tzorech of the meal, for example, to give instructions, to tell people what to do, and the like, you're allowed to do that. But this is not the time to tell that story about your uncle or whatever. Anyway, the Seder probably is not the best has time for that anyway. Okay, right, so that's Korach. Okay, so then we have Shulchan Orech, not Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Orech. It's interesting, what's the difference between Shulchan Aruch and Shulchan Orech? Grammatically, they do not mean the same thing. Shulchan Aruch is passive, a set table. But keep in mind, the simanim of the Seder are verbs of action. Kadesh, make kiddush. Rechatz, wash your hands. Although karpas doesn't fit in. Karpas is just a noun. Karpas, but yachatz, break. Magid, declare. Therefore, motzi, right? That also kind of a name. Motzi masa is a name, but shulchan orech means set the table, not a set table. Shulchan orech, set the table. Okay. The meal, what do you have to be careful about in the meal? So really two things. You are allowed, of course, to eat, including matzah at the meal, if you want to eat matzah. But and there is a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, of course. But one has to be very, very careful not to overstuff yourself so that the apikomen, you still have some appetite for the apikomen. Because if you are so stuffed that eating something extra disgusts you, you're really fulfilled up that way, you're not yotze, the mitzvah of apikomen, because that is what is called achila gasa. Now it is true that the apikomen, like the korban pesach, is supposed to be eaten when you're satisfied with your meal, but it should be the way you're satisfied when you have a dessert, meaning, you know, you can still eat something even though, you know, you're not hungry anymore. But so number one, be careful that it's not achila gasa. Number two, because l'chatchila, the apikomen should be eaten, finished, before chatzos, so try to time the meal that you will eat the apikomen before chatzos. That's sometimes a challenge, especially the second day in Chutz La'aretz, and even now in Eretz Yisrael, you know, which was traditional that they used to change the clocks here after Pesach, or after the Seder at least. Now they change the clock before. So, say, in other words, the Seder begins later than it would normally begin. But Chatzos is not 12 midnight. Chatzos is not that at all. Chatzos is the midpoint from sunset to sunrise. So usually it'll be around 1 or 1:30. I don't remember the exact time. But it's Lav Davka. The halachic definition of Chatzos is not midnight is midnight, the middle of the night. It is not 12 midnight, which is just an arbitrary thing. B'diavet, if you miss chatzos, you still eat the apikomen. There's no question. You do not forfeit the apikomen. You eat the apikomen even after chatzos, but it is better to eat it before chatzos. One should be mishtadol to eat it before chatzos. Let me point out, too, that even during the meal, first of all, in every meal, there's a mitzvah to say Divrei Torah. That's true even during the week, Kal v'chomer on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But Leil Pesach as well, one should continue, if at all possible, discussing the Inyanim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, not every vort of the Haggadah has to be said in Magid, right? You could say Torah in the meal itself. And the Brisker Rav has many rayas that even discussing the Halachos of Pesach is also a fulfillment of Sibri Yetzias Mitzrayim, even if you're not talking about the Exodus per se. So it's not only the Nisim and Niflos, but it's also the Halachos of Pesach. In fact, you see this from the Haggadah itself, because when the Chacham asks the question, what's the meaning of all these things? What does it say? Afata emerlo, you should tell him, Kehilchos Pesach. What do you see? That discussing the laws of Pesach is also a fulfillment of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So stick with Chiddush, actually, a little bit, because I would have thought Sipur B'Yikar is the Nisim and the Niflos. But one has to be careful. Let me just give you a bit of practical advice. That the truth of the matter is, if somebody is a Ben Yeshiva and somebody learned these sugyas, so you may be very attracted to the halachos and the lamdas. You know, a lamdan is attracted to lamdash things. But sometimes the lamdash things that a Ben Torah finds most interesting are not necessarily those things that are appreciated by people who don't have, don't learn Gemara or not involved. So one has to be careful sometimes. And I say this from my own personal experience. I remember when I came in yeshiva and I had like, you know, Rav Chaims and the different things, and I, you know, and I wanted to share them. And, you know, it wasn't always the right thing to do. So one has to be sensitive to that, not only for the children but even for the adults that are there, to keep things on a level that people can appreciate and people can understand.
For those keeping 2 days, the second Seder, is there an optimal time to count Sfira? Or is that going to be considered a Hesek in any of this?
Are you talking about for someone who keeps 2 days, or somebody that's just keeping 1 day but is a guest in the second day Seder?
Keeping 2 days.
Okay, in other words, a chutz laretz person, a person who keeps 2 days. Yeah, yeah, so there are two minhagim. The best minhag is to count before the Seder, once it's dark. Don't make it part of the Seder at all. But many Haggadahs have Sfiras HaOmer after benching. So you could follow it that way too. But I think it's better to count before Kiddush. But assuming it's already dark and the light. Okay, so those are things. Remember, one other thing, the Ashkenazim have a minhag. The Ashkenazim have a minhag that once we begin the meal, the very first thing we eat is a hard-boiled egg. And it's not a din, it's not an obligation, but it's a minhag that many, many people have. And there are different reasons for this. But one reason is the egg is the food that you give an ovel right after a levaya, because it represents an oval or the circular nature, that there are good times and bad times, but the bad times will change and become good times. And so too we are menachem everybody Leil Pesach, because Leil Pesach is the night of Tisha B'Av, and we don't have the Beis HaMikdash and our hearts are broken in some ways. So the egg is a getter of Nichum Aveilim. And I think I mentioned, it's no accident that the Beis HaMikdash was Nechrav on the same day of the week as Leil Pesach. Because here's what I wanted to suggest. We start counting the Omer the second night of Pesach. Now, what does counting of the Omer do? It connects freedom with Torah. But the first day of Pesach, you don't count the Omer yet. So it's freedom that's not yet linked with Torah. So what is the limud? When freedom is not yet mechubar to Torah, it will lead to destruction. So the egg is the substitute for Sfiras HaOmer on the first night. Why you have an egg the second Seder, that's a good catch. That's a good catch. Let's make it the yom. Okay. But that's pshat number one, why we eat the egg. Pshat number two is from the Ishbitzer. Who is the Ishbitzer? The Ishbitzer was Rav Tzadok's Rebbe. Rav Tzadok is a little well-known in the yeshivish world. The Ishbitzer was a great, great Hasidic Rebbe that was Rav Tzadok's Rebbe. And the Ishbitzer's work, the Mei Shiluach, was popularized by none other than Shlomo Kalbach, Aleichem Shalom, who loved the Ishbitzer's writings and would often use the Ishbitzer in all of his concerts and the like. So the Ishbitzer is actually very widely known outside of the yeshiva world now, maybe more than in the yeshiva world because of Shlomo Kalbach's Pearson. But the Ishbitzer says a beautiful thought. He says, what is unique about an egg, about a bird? Birds are born in two stages. There is the laying of the egg, and then there is the hatching of the egg. Unlike mammals, humans, cows, in which there's a live birth, here you're born in two. A bird is born in two stages. The egg comes out of the mother, and then eventually the bird comes out of the egg. So he says that's a remez that Klal Yisrael was born in two stages. There was Yitzias Mitzrayim, but that's only the laying of the egg. But we're not truly born until we break through the egg, break through the klipa. Klipa is also the Yetzer Hara, right? The blockages. And that's Matan Torah that gives us the tavlin, gives us the ability to break through the Yetzer Hara. Okay? There's a famous... I'll mention it quickly. I don't want to be marking in the Var Halacha as much because I have other things I want to cover. But one of the issues that you sometimes face is, let's say Chassos is 1 o'clock, And you had a long magid, and by the time you're ready for Motzi Matzah, it's a quarter to one. So the question becomes, like, what do you do? Because you want to eat the apikomen by chatzos. So there's a whole meal here, right? So you finish. So you ate the matzah, the morer, the korech, right? You did all that. And now you only have 10 minutes. So your two choices are seemingly, either one is not that good. Choice number one is, I'm going to skip the meal. Maybe I'll have some soup and that's it, and or a piece of fish. And then I'm going to go straight to the apikomen. Because remember, you can't eat the meal after the apikomen. That's the problem. You can't say, oh, I'll have the apikomen before chatzos, and then I'll have my meal afterwards. It doesn't work. Because once you eat the apikomen, not allowed to eat anything else. So, option one is, eat the apikomen before chatzos and don't have a meal. Which is actually not so bad intrinsically, because very often you're not that hungry anyway. But it's not kavodik for the Akeres Habayis that put in a lot of time and a lot of effort, right? Certainly not. Oh, we'll skip everything. The alternative is also no good. Eat a meal and then eat the epikomen after chatzos. Not good. Even though b'di'eved, you certainly eat the epikomen after chatzos, but the chatzila, you're not supposed to do that. Right? So what do you do? It's a real dilemma. So, around 150 years ago, the great posek, the Avnei Nezer, the Sacher Chevre Rebbe, great posek, created an absolutely brilliant Tanai. This is called the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer, in which he figured out a way that you can literally, you know, have your apikomen and eat it too, in which you could do everything. And he says the following: what is the shaila if the apikomen has to be eaten by chatzos? Why? Why is that so? Because like this. The apikomen is a commemoration of the Korban Pesach. And there's a machlokes tanoim, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, if Korban Pesach is chatzos, or Korban Pesach is the whole night. And there's a machlokes rishonim, if we paskin like Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So in order to be choshesh that you paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we do it before chatzos. But since, if we missed it, the halacha might be like Rabbi Akiva, we do it after chatzos, right? That's the nature of the din. Now, here's what the Avnei Nezer's chiddush is. Now, this is already a chiddush. When we say you're not allowed to eat after the apikomen, does that mean forever? I mean, obviously, it doesn't mean forever. You're going to eat the next day. So, b'diyuk, what is it that I say you can't? How long can't you eat after the apikomen? So this is the Avnei Nezer's Chiddush, which you could argue with. He says, you can't eat after the apikomen, kol zaman, that it's the time of the mitzvah of the apikomen. In other words, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he actually says, you'd be allowed to eat regular food after chatzos. It's only like Rabbi Akiva, you couldn't eat. Right? In other words, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's chumrah, that I must eat the Korban Pesach before chatzos, actually has a kula, I'm allowed to eat after chatzos. Like Rabbi Akiva, who gives you the ability to eat the Korban Pesach the whole night, you can't eat anything else the whole night. Mm. So therefore, Zakti Avnei Nezer, so let's do our wonderful tonight. It's 5 minutes to one. I didn't have my chicken soup yet. I pick up a piece of matzah. Now granted, it may not be the designated apikomen, but that's not ma'akev. And I say the following: if the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that the apikomen must be eaten before chatzos, I hereby am mechaven to eat this l'shem apikomen. If the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, I am mechaven, this is just a piece of matzah. I eat it. I then wait 5 minutes till 1 o'clock. And then, miman efshach, I'm allowed to continue eating, because like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, I ate the apikomen, but I could resume eating after chatzos. Like Rabbi Akiva, I didn't eat the apikomen yet. So then, I can eat until 2 o'clock in the morning. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I take another piece of matzah. And I make the tanai in reverse. If the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that the first matzah I ate was the afikoman, and therefore I'm just allowed to eat after chatzos, then this matzah is just matzah. But if the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, so that the first piece of matzah I ate was not the afikoman, I'm eating it for the afikoman now. So this is the famous or the infamous Tanai of the Avnei Nezer that allows a person to eat his meal after chatzos by having two afikomens conditional on this night. You understand the Tanai that you make. Now the big problem is the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Svarim that are the practical poskim. They don't specifically reject this. They don't say cannot do this. But Lamai said they don't bring it. And the very fact that they don't bring such a brilliant Eitza, and the Avnei Nezer was known to both the Mishnah Berurah. I mean, Avnei Nezer was known as a great, great Paisek. I think you could assume that maybe the Chafetz Chaim wouldn't have been maskin to this. And I don't want to get into too much lumpus. There are reasons why the Avnei Nezer may not work. But still, people say like this, if Mimanav Shach, you're going to violate the Chatzais rule. Let's say you've decided that you will not hurt your wife, you're going to eat your meal no matter what. So it might be Kedai to do this tonight, because it's better than not doing it tonight and just eating the Afikomen at the end. But this is the Tanai of the Avnei Nezer, and some people are so mechanic. Yeah.
Each one you would have to do this year?
Yep. Yeah. So that's the disadvantage. You'd be right. Each one would be a full year. Okay. Alrighty. Then we have benching, of course. Benching, third cup. Then we begin hollow. Not begin hollow, we continue hollow. Remember, we split hollow. Now, before we begin, I had mentioned that Hallel Lel Pesach is very unusual, and the most unusual feature is that it's split. Two prakim before the Suda, two prakim after the Suda. We discussed why there's no bracha rishona on it, because you're actually experiencing freedom. That's what Rav Haigai means when he says it's the Hallel of Shira, it is not the Hallel of Kriya. That you only make a bracha when you're commemorating what Hashem did, not when you're experiencing it. But the main reason why the halal is split is the first two prakim are about the past, Yitzias Mitzrayim. But now we are praising Hashem for the future redemption that will come. So it's a little disheartening sometimes. People sometimes, not so knowledgeable or from, they sometimes leave after the meal. They don't even stay for this challah. And in a way, you can understand a little bit, because number one, unlike the magid where you can talk and explain, in challah you're not mafsik, so you're just reading, although you should sing. Singing is absolutely appropriate, so it might be a time for nigunim. And many people find, if they understand what's going on, they find the Hallel of Leil Seder to be a very, very moving Hallel. People discuss, when people remember Siddurim that they had, that Gedolim or whatever it is, that they'll often say they remember the Hallel. Not so much the Magid, because the Derech of many, many Gedolim, for various reasons, is they had a relatively quick Magid. People are sometimes surprised, maybe because of Chatzos, maybe not to be Matriach people. But where they really put in a lot of special effort is the Romamus HaNefesh, the elevation of the soul of Hallel. Now, because really what you're thinking about at this point is you're thinking about Mashiach. You're thinking about Geula. And that is why we preface the Hallel with pouring a cup for Eliyahu HaNavi, who will be the announcer of Mashiach. That is why we open the door as if to say Hashem protects us. And that is why we begin with a paragraph that's a little controversial in some circles, in which we ask Hashem to destroy and punish all of those who have afflicted us and have tried to destroy Hashem's name. Again, this is not anti-Goyim per se. It doesn't say Shloch HaMascha Ala Goyim. It doesn't say pour your anger on the Goyim. It doesn't say that. But it says that don't know you that have consumed us, that have destroyed your Beis HaMikdash, right? It's a very specific and the like. But the reason why this comes here is because it reminds us that we're no longer thinking about the past. We're thinking about the future. Pesach is now allowing us, just like Shabbos, is me'ein olam haba, experiencing a taste of the world to come. We're now experiencing the taste of Yemos HaMashiach. Right? And some people sing Aliyah HaNavi, whatever your minhag is. But once you begin Hallel, you know, you can't be mafsik. You can sing Hallel, but you can't say other
negunim.
Huh? Leil Shimurim. It's a night of protection. There's a medrash that says, this old idea that Eliyahu Navi come, you know, countless parents tell their children, oh, Eliyahu Navi is going to drink from the cup, and sometimes they pour a drop away. And, you know, it does not say that there is no makor in Chazal that Eliyahu Navi drinks from the cup of Eliyahu. There's no makor for that at all. But there is a makor that Eliyahu Navi visits every home during a Seder. And this is based on the medrash that says that at some point, after the story of Eliyahu on Mount Carmel, when everybody saw the great miracle of the fire coming down from heaven, and they all said, Hashem hu Elokim. But the very next day, they went back to Avodah Zarah. The very next day, this great miracle did not change them at all. Eliyahu HaNavi got disgusted. He got disgusted. He says, I did all of these things. It had no ashpa. And he actually told the Kaddish Baruch Hu, reject them, forget them. And essentially what happened was, Kaddish Baruch Hu fired Eliyahu. He said, you know, anoint your successor, you're going to go up to Shemayim, and that's it. I mean, that's really what happened. But it says that Eliyahu HaNavi used the words, Es brischa heferu. They have annulled your bris. They don't keep your covenant. So state in Medrash, Eliyahu HaNavi was punished by Hashem that he has to show up at every bris that Jewish people do. Oh, they don't keep the bris? Everybody has a bris. You know, literally, although he wasn't referring specifically to that. And also the Pesach Seder, because these are the two mitzvahs, the Medrash says, that Yidden keep. And that's very, very true. You know, Yidden keep. Maybe the Seder is not totally kosher, but everybody, nothing is everybody. But, you know, many, many, many Jews who are very far from mitzvahs, there is a concept of having a Seder.
The idea of a kos itself, why specific?
Yeah, so the kos itself is not in the Gemara. The kos itself is because the four kosas are because of the four terms of redemption. And there is a fifth term, Vehevesi, I will bring you to the land. And that's not going to be fulfilled till Mashiach comes. And since Eliyahu is going to be the announcer of Mashiach, this is a cup in honor of Eliyahu that we will drink when Mashiach comes. Okay? Alrighty. So we say Hallel. But here, things get a little confusing. Most of what you're going to say is Hallel, right? So there's a lot to say, obviously, but you know. Hallel is Hallel. And Hallel ends, and by the way, when you have Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki L'Olam Chasdo, Yomer Na Yisrael, all those things, optimally it should be recited with like Chazan, the one that's conducting the Seder, with at least two responses. So, for example, the one that's conducting the Seder will say, like a Chazan would do. Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Li'olam Chasdo. And then there should be at least two other people that answer Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Lam Chasdo, and then they also say Yomer Na Yisrael, and then the Chazan should say, the Baal Agadah should say Yomer Na Yisrael. In other words, like a Chazan, just like a Chazan does it. The one that conducts the Seder should do it as well. Huh? Yeah. I mean, women should answer too, but the idea should be men. Yes,
should be done sitting.
Huh?
All of the sudden sitting.
Oh, sitting. Yes. We actually sit. We do not stand for this. You're not supposed to stand for this. Okay. So here is what I want to then talk about. So Hallel ends, right? The Psukim of Hallel ends with Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki Li'olam Chasdo, which is repeated twice. Actually, in Tehillim it's only once, but. Like all the end verses there, right? The last eight verses are repeated twice. Hodu Lashem Ki Tov Ki L'Olam Chasdo. Now, what do you do after that? So let me explain something here, because if your family are using a different Haggadah, There'll be some confusion here because there are different shitas exactly what you do. The Gemara says, I'm sorry, the Mishnah says in Arvei Pesachim that you recite Hallel after the meal and you end Hallel with what is called Birkas Hashir, a special bracha of song, and then you drink the fourth cup. What is the Birkas Hashir? Very unusual phrase. It only appears in the about the Haggadah. So it's a machlekes Rav Yehuda and Rav Yechanan. A machlekes HaMayraim, what is Birkas Hashir? Rav Yehuda says, Birkas Hashir is nothing more than the paragraph of Yehalelucha. In other words, the same thing as Hallel always ends with, which ends with Baruch Atah Hashem, Melech Mehulal Batish Bechas. Which means, according to Rav Yehuda, you don't say Nishmas and Yishtabach. You're simply Chosein Yehalelucha. Now, Maral asks the Taisus asks it as well, so it's not just the Maral. Taisus asks the Kasha, if all you're doing is ending Hallel the way you always end Hallel, so what does the Mishnah mean by calling it a special name of Birkas Hashir? So Tosos answers Pashit. The Mishnah in Sukkah says that the Bracha Acharona of Hallel was not a Chiyuv at all. It was only a Minhag. B'makom Shenagu, La'omrim, Omrim. So the Mishnah wants to make the point, Leil Pesach, the Bracha of Yehalelucha that you say the whole year, is a chiyuv, not just a minhag. But, according to Rav Yehuda, the way you end Hallel is no different than the way you end Hallel every single time. Same thing. Birkas Hashir is nothing more than Yehalelucha. Which means, according to Rav Yehuda, you didn't say Nishmas, and you didn't say Yishtabach. The Rambam and the Rif actually Paskin, like Rav Yehuda, they do not have Yishtabach Nishmas in the Haggadah at all. Now, Rav Yochanan says that the Chasima for Leil Seder is different and unique than the Chasima of Hallel the whole year. Instead of the short paragraph Yehalelucha, you end the Hallel with Nishmas and Shochein Ad and Yishtabach. Now, so you have a machlokas Rav Yehuda and Rav Yochanan. But you then have a machlokas Rishayim within Rav Yochanan. Does Rav Yochanan mean only Nishmas and Yishtabach? Or do you also say Yehalelucha, because that's the normal Hallel, and you say Nishmas and Yishtabach? Which means, according to that view, you actually have two brachas. You say Melech Mu'al B'tish B'chos, then you say Nishmas Yishtabach, Melech Kel Cheho Lamin. Okay, so as a result of all of this uncertainty, so there's really two different questions. Do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, or do we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan? And if you paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, do you have two chasimas or only one chasimah? So because of this, let me give you the different views in halacha. View number one is, as I said already, the Rambam and the Rif, that all you do is Yehalelucha, meaning it's the exact same way Hallel is ended the entire year. There is no Haggadah that follows that shita today, so you will not have a Haggadah that's printed in modern times that will not have Nishmas and Yishtabach, right? So that is a shita of Rishayim, but as I say, we do not follow that. But what you will see are a few different things. In some Haggadahs, after you finish Hallel, Hodu Lashem Tito Kidolam Chasto, you then say Nishmas Yishtabach, but the chasima is Yehalelucha, like Rav Yehuda. So it says, Brachos v'hoda'os me'atva v'yad olam. But instead of saying, Kel melech gadol batish b'chos, you then say, Yehalelucha, and you're chosein, melech mehulal batish b'chos. So according to that, you're actually following Rav Yehuda's chasima, but you're putting in Nishmas and Yishtabach to be Yosei Rav Yochanan. Other Haggadahs work the opposite way. After Hodu Lashem Kitov Kidolam Chasto, they say the paragraph of Yehalalucha, but they're not Chosen. They say Kimi Alam Yadolam Atokeo, and then they say Nishmas Yishtabach, and they add Habocher B'Shirei Zimra Melech Elchei Ha'olamim. Okay, so basically, what you're going to have is this: every Haggadah you're going to see is going to have both the Yehalalucha paragraph and Nishmas and Yishtabach. But the question is going to be, is the Yehalalucha paragraph right after Halo without a Chasima, and the Chasima is Yishtabach? Or no, I say Nishmas and Yishtabach, but the Chasima is going to be the Yehalalucha paragraph. So different Haggadahs will have different ways. For example, the Haggadah that I have here is Yehalalucha is right after Halel without a Chasima. And then, of course, Halel Haggadah will get to. Then there's Nishmas, Yishtabach, and your Chosem, Habocher B'Shirei Zimra, Melech Kel Chei Ha'olamim. What Haggadah?
Yes, yes, yes.
You have the same way?
Yes, the same way.
Okay. All right. So those are the two different versions you're going to see. Now, there is another sheet that has two chasimas. See, the two things you're not going to see in modern Haggadahs is you're not going to see only Yehalalucha, even though that's the sheet of the Rif and the Rambam, and you're not going to see the double chasima. In other words, although it's in the Maral's Haggadah, the Maral held you should have a double chasima. In other words, in which after Yehalalucha you say Melech Mulal B'Tishbachos, and after Yishtabach you say Habocher B'Shirei Zimra Melech Kel Chayol. There is such a shita that Tysus even brings that you have two chasimas that you're not going to see.
Right? So
the
two. Are we going
Huh?
We're not going with the Rambam Rif, but
no. Most other Rishayim, the Ran and most other Rishayim say you only go with one chasima. But there's a machlokas: is the chasima Yehalalucha or is the chasima Melech Kel Chayol? Right. So as I say, so we have a total of four shitas here. Some are only Chosein with Yehalalucha, that you're not going to see. Some are Chosein twice, that you're not going to see. Some are Chosein with Yehalalucha after Yishtabach, that you'll see. And some said Yehalalucha first, but they're Chosein with Yishtabach. And that's the most common thing you'll see in here. How about this? Yeah.
How can you start, or how can you have two endings if you, I mean, we already don't have a beginning, or we said we could have
yes.
a beginning.
So the Maral is Masbir, the concept is this. There are two things here. Remember that the term that the Mishnah uses for the bracha is Birkas Hashir. So he wants to say there are two different things here. The special Birkas Hashir is Nishmas and Yishtabach. But Halel has an after bracha. That's not the Birkas Hashir, it's the after bracha of Halel. So you have the after bracha of Halel, and then you have Birchas Hashir.
And then the same way that Mishnah discusses different ways you can respond, I guess you could say, to Halel. Does that mean everyone has the chiyuv to say it themselves this evening?
Yes, everybody has to say Halel, yeah. Now, one other thing though, and that is there's another thing in the Haggadah that I didn't mention, and that is between Halel and Nishmas, there is something else here that's interposed, and that is Tehillim Kuf Chafav 126, that is, we say it on Shabbos, Hodu Lashem Kitov, right, this is called Halel HaGadol, this is called the Big Halel. Now it's a little strange. Halel, the Big Halel, the Halel that we just recited is called Halel HaMitzri, the Halel that the Jews recited in Mitzrayim. And it is much longer than the thing that we call Halel HaGadol. Why do I call this Zemer Halel HaGadol? One might answer, it's a euphemism. It's like Lashon Sagi Nohar, just like we call the Kiddush of Shabbos morning Kiddusha Rabbah, the great Kiddush, even though it's much shorter. But the Gemara in Pesachim says differently. The Gemara in Pesachim says the reason this is called Halel HaGadol is because it contains the pasuk Nosein Lechem Lechol Basar. Hashem gives sustenance to all creatures from the smallest ants to the largest animal. And the Gemara says a startling idea. Parnassa is greater than Geula. Geula is like a one-time thing. We're in trouble, God rescues us. Parnassa is the long haul. It's the day to day to day. And therefore the Shevach of Parnassa is a greater Shevach than Geula. Even though it's less dramatic in some ways, right? It's not always a supernatural miracle. Now here, the Maral has a taina which is an absolutely ironclad taina, although we don't possibly like the Maral here. He says, a big chiddush, Halal HaGadol is absolutely put in the wrong place. It does not belong here. Because the following, when you look at the Mishnah, here's your problem. The Mishnah says, you recite Halal, and after Halal, you recite Birchas Hashir. And Birchas Hashir, we have a machlokas. Is it Yahalalucha, or is it Nishmas and Yishtabach? So we have different combinations. There is no reference at that point to this Halal HaGadol. Halal, Birchas Hashir, and we have a machlokas. Is Birchas Hashir, Yahalalucha, or Nishmas V'Yishtabach? So where does Birchas Hashir come in, the Maral says? If you look at the next Mishnah, it brings the Shita of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon actually had a Shita that you're supposed to drink a fifth cup. And on the fifth cup, you said Halal HaGadol. So, the Maral says, first of all, you see that Rabbi Tarfon only added Halal HaGadol because you were drinking a fifth cup. So that might mean, if you're not drinking a fifth cup, because we don't paskin that way, you don't say Halal HaGadol at all. But second of all, even if you're going to say there's no harm in saying Halal HaGadol, but it should not interrupt between Halal and the after bracha of Halal, it should be said afterwards, whether you have a fifth cup or not. So the Maral's taina is that, number one, he does suggest a fifth cup as an optional. You're allowed to have a fifth cup. So he says, optimally, after you finish Halal, you say Yalucha, and you say Nishmas Yishtabach, and the Maral holds two brachas, actually. Then you drink the fourth cup, and after the fourth cup, you pour a fifth cup, and you say Halal HaGadol. Or, if you don't want a fifth cup, you say Halal HaGadol without a fifth cup. But you say it after the fourth cup. And that is absolutely a very, very logical position. One of the Tzorech Iyans in the Haggadah is the interposition of Halal HaMitzri, Halal HaGadol, between Halal HaMitzri and Birkas HaShir. But this is the minhag, I'm not telling you to change it. The minhag is as we have it. But I think the Maral's time is a very, very strong.
Does the Maral answer it?
No, the Maral says it's wrong. The Maral says it's incorrect.
He takes it out?
No, he doesn't take it out. He says you say it after,
after the fourth cup.
That's what he says. The Maral says you say it after the fourth cup. This is what he says. I'm not aware of anyone that does the Maral's practice here, but this is what he says in the Gevurah session. Okay. Alrighty. Now, at this point, when you had the fourth cup, the Seder is over. Well, you say the after bracha on the wine. Let me just mention a little Dabar Halacha here. That the after bracha on the wine, for all of the Dalit Kaisis, you only have to drink most of a Revius. Most of a Revius. But for a bracha acharona, you have to drink a whole Revius. Therefore, for the fourth cup, now again, you're not mechuyev to make a bracha, right? You know, but if you're gonna make a bracha achrona, you gotta be sure that you're drinking a revius shalem. That's at least 4 ounces. Again, if you don't want to do that, you can be yotzei dalid kosos with ro revius, but then you would not make a bracha achrona. And anyway, the Baal Seder could be mostly people, but whoever is making the bracha achrona has to be makbid to drink a revius of wine. Okay. Now this is the end of the Seder. At this point, even before the recitation of the paragraph nirzo, I'll give you a little history about that. The Seder is finished when you have drunk the fourth cup, and indeed among Sephardim, many Sephardim, that's the end of the Seder. Right? You can go. Now, Ashkenazim have a minhag that we actually add 7 additions after the fourth cup. And the first addition is the paragraph called Nirtza. That's an addition. And then we have other additions. Let me just go over this very, very briefly. Nirtza is a prayer to Hashem that just as we merited to finish the Seder Kahalacha, may Hashem give us the opportunity to come back to Eretz Yisrael and serve Him with the Geula Shleima. And it's the custom is to add Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim at that point. And even if in Yerushalayim, we want to have a Yerushalayim of Geula and Yeshua. Now, let me explain something about the paragraph of Nirtza. And I know there are Nigunim for Nirtza that people have. Sfarim don't say this paragraph. And Chabad doesn't say it. Now, Chabad gives a reason they don't say it, because they say the Seder is never over. The Hashpah of the Seder continues. So how can you say the Seder is over? It goes on the whole year. Okay, Chabad always has a reason. But okay. But let me just say that this is lifted from a different place. The paragraph Chasal Seder Pesach was not written for the Haggadah at all. But rather, and again, it's unfortunate that most Ashkenazim don't say it anymore. But you know, for the 4 Parshios and for Shabbos HaGadol, you can still find it in the Seder. There are special Yotzros, special additional prayers that were inserted in Chazaras HaShatz. And the Yekis still say them, and Hasidim say them. But most Ashkenazi Kehilos do not say them anymore. Although I remember even in the Young Israel, we used to say them many years ago. And in the Piyut for Shabbos HaGadol, one of the poetic compositions is a long description of all of the laws of the Seder. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that description, the Piyut says, we've now finished describing the Seder. So this is taken from the Piyut of Shabbos HaGadol. It was not written for that. So somebody, some anonymous person, had a bright idea. Hey, if you can say this at the end of enumerating what you do at a Seder, why don't we say it at the end of an actual Seder? Right? So Chasal Seder Pesach was lifted from what is called the Kroiva. Those prayers, those piyutim were called Krovos. Krovos is things that you're approaching Kedusha, things that are said before Kedusha. Today, we only say Krovos on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But not only were they for the 4 Parshios and Shabbos HaGadol, the Emes says they were almost every Shabbos of the year, if you go back, had special Krovos. Again, if you go to the Yaki congregation, you'll see Krovos all over the place. The weeks of Sfira, the 3 weeks, like every Hanukkah, every type of occasion. It's a whole liturgy. Okay, now, we even know who the author of this is, because we know who the author of the Kroiva for Shabbos HaGadol in Ashkenazi Sidurim is. He was a Paitan who lived a little before Rashi. That's how old it is. And his name was a strange name, Rav Yosef Tov Elam. Now, Tov Elam is a strange last name. It means a fine young man. Why is he called a fine young man? That is a Hebrew translation of his French name, Rav Yosef Bonfi. Hmm. Bonfi means a fine gentleman. Right, so the Hebrew is Tovela, very literal, and the like. Okay, now the next are 2 piyutim, which are also very, very old. And
is the second of the 7?
Yes, second of the 7. Yeah, the second of the 7. And in Chutz La'aretz, where people have 2 siddurim, they do 1 the first night and 1 the second night. If you only have 1 seder, we actually say both. And the first is Vayhi B'chatzi HaLaila. Again, there are different nigunim for this. And the other is V'amartem Zevach Pesach. Now let me explain something here. These are virtually identical in format. They are Aleph based. But the difference is that the first piyut describes all the miracles Hashem did at night. Lav davka Pesach night. So the first piyut emphasizes the miracles of night. The second piyut emphasizes the miracles of Pesach. Now, if you make a list of the two groupings, some will overlap, like Makas Becharos. Makas Becharos was at night of Pesach, so it appears in both. But some are Pesach and not night, and some are night and not Pesach, and some are Pesach and night. And why do we want to emphasize this? Because you have to understand what's going on here. Number one, for most of our history, although Baruch Hashem things may be a little better today, but for most of our history, we were living in persecution. Our lives were in danger. Pesach night was actually a fairly dangerous time. That's when there used to be blood libels that Jews would kill, were accused of killing Christian babies to get their blood for matzah. In fact, this is a belief, by the way, that there are segments in the world that still talk about this to this very day. Famous blood libels and the like. So a person might be a little subrachim. I'm going through a whole Seder with miracles and all that. And then I look at my own life, and maybe I'm in Auschwitz, maybe I'm in a concentration camp. And how am I supposed to feel that Hashem has redeemed me? How am I supposed to feel cheiros? So the first piyut reminds you, even in the darkest night, Hashem redeems. And that's why the Medrash says, it is dark ayishal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lasos nisim belayla. It is the way of Hashem to make miracles at night, because that's the chizuk to a person. That tells a person that when life is at its darkest, right? What is the saying? Night is darkest before the dawn. At the depth of the darkness comes the Yeshua. So the first piyut is there to teach me that don't give up hope, even in the depths of your darkness. There is Geula. And the second piyut reminds me, hey, it's Pesach time. Pesach is a great zman of Geula. It talks about Mordechai and Esther. It talks about all the different things. But remember, Haman was hung, not on Purim. Haman was hung on Pesach. Now, who are the authors? We know the authors are important here. Vayhi B'chatzi HaLaila was written by the person who is credited to be the first poet, so to speak, the first Paitan. This goes back to Mamish, the 600s, the 7th century. And his name was Yanai. Yanai was the first one who added these additions to the Amida and the like.
King?
Yanai. No. Yanai the king is a bad fellow. This is after the Gemara.
He wrote them or he added them?
No, he wrote them and he added them. Again, there was some... The Gaonim discussed the halachic propriety of this. Now, Yanai's disciple was the most famous of the Paitanim, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. Rabbi Elazar HaKalir wrote the Kinos of Tisha B'Av. He wrote the stuff we say on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He wrote thousands. We read only a tipah min hayom of what he wrote. He wrote thousands and thousands of poems, and the Amartim Zebach Pesach was taken. So again, Vayhi B'chatzi HaLaila, you can also find in the Ashkenazic Shabbos HaGadol davening. In other words, if you look at this, you'll see Chasal Seder Pesach and B'chatzi HaLaila. By the way, that's why some Haggadahs make a mistake, and they will say Vayhi B'chatzi HaLaila was authored by Rav Yosef Tov Elim, because it's in that same Krova as Nirza, but not true. He lifted it from Yana. In other words, this was taken from a much earlier thing. So although it got incorporated in Rav Yosef Tov Elim's Piyutim.
Were they at the same time? Or?
No. Different times.
Different times.
But Rav Yosef Tov Elim's Piyut incorporated Vayhi B'chatzi HaLaila. And that's why you'll find, if you go into this, that some Haggadahs will say Vayhi B'chatzi HaLaila was written by Rav Yosef Tov Elim, but other Haggadahs say correctly it is from Yanai. Remember, Yanai, Rav Yosef Tov Elim is in Rashi's time. That's like the 1000s. Yanai is from the 600s, 400 years earlier. Now, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir is also from the 600s, and Rabbi Amartim Zebach Pesach It talks about Avram and Yitzchak and Makas Bechoros, Samcheirev, who is going to destroy Jerusalem, and all of his soldiers died the night of Pesach. That's both a night and a Pesach miracle. The miracle of the handwriting on the wall, all of these different things. Now, one thing about Rebbe Elazar HaKalir, the Eben Ezra in his Perish on Koheles is very, very critical of Rebbe Elazar HaKalir, because Rebbe Elazar HaKalir has an extremely complicated style in which he will be alluding to Midrashim and Psukim, and you will have no idea of what he means unless you know all of these Psukim and the Chazals. So the Eben Ezra says one should write prayers in a way that people can understand, not that only if you know a whole bunch of things will it make sense to you. And he is critical of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir's very complicated style. I just want to give you a little example from this itself about, in fact this is a relatively simple example, but even this you can see Rabbi Elazar HaKalir's complexity. This is V'Amartem Zevach Pesach. So look at the Kuf, the last stanza. So the first two lines are relatively straightforward. Kahal, remember, it's everything is an alphabetical acrostic. Kahal Kinsa Hadasa. Hadasa, who's Hadasa? Hadasa, of course, Esther. Now, even that's not the most obvious. When you think Hadasa, you don't automatically know it's Esther, but he likes to use the less common name. The congregation was gathered by Hadasa, Tzom L'Shalesh, to have a threefold fast. And that was Pesach, right? The fast of Esther was during Pesach. 13th, 14th, 15th of Nisan. Rosh Mibeis Rasha Machatzta, the head of the house of evil, you cut off, Be'etz Chamishim, on a tree of 50. Pesach? Okay, so far so good. Next, Shtei Eile Rega Tavi Liutzit. These two in a minute bring to the Yutzit on Pesach. So what is these two in a minute, and who is Utzit? These two in a minute. The answer is Rebbe Elazar HaKalir is alluding to two different psukim. One, Yeshayahu Perek Memtes, and the other Eicha Perek Dalit, and he is combining two psukim which are not connected to each other at all, but he's combining them to make a sentence. In Yeshayahu Perek Memtes, the Navi is talking about the enemies of God that will be destroyed when Mashiach comes, and it says Shtei Eile, these two things God will bring in a moment. And the two things that are mentioned are Shikul v'Almon. Shikul is bereavement of children, and Almon is widowhood. And these are called Shtei Eile Rega. These two will come down on the Rishayim in a minute. So, if you didn't know the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, you would not know what is Shtei Eile Rega. Now, who is Utsit? So, in Megillas Eicha, when Yirmiyahu is talking about how the Babylonians destroyed the temple, and he knew with Ruach HaKodesh that the Edomites, the Romans, would destroy the second temple, but even in the first temple, they were helping the Babylonians. And Esav, these are Edomites, Bnei Esav, they are described as living in the land of Uz. So another term for Esav is he who dwells in the land of Uz. So Rav Kalir created his own word by calling that Utsit. Utsit is a made-up word. But what he did was, so he took a reference in Yeshayahu, and he took a reference in Eicha, and he basically said, the Shtei Eile of bereavement and widowhood should befall the Utsit, the Bnei Esav, that destroy us and persecute us. Now he does this thousands of times, and sometimes it's a much more complicated reconstruction, but this is typical of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, in which he combines different psukim, different Amari Chazal. He also makes up words, makes up quite a few words. In fact, he actually had a great influence in the development of the Hebrew language, because he made up different words. Now, the Ibn Ezra didn't like it, because the Ibn Ezra said, you're violating all the laws of dicta, whatever, he had a whole long, long maracha against Rav Elazar Kalir. And yet, we consider Rav Elazar Kalir to be a Baal Ruach HaKodesh. Okay? So you understand the comment. So really, he really follows his Rebbe in many ways, because it's the same pattern of Aleph Beis enumerating miracles. But Yanai enumerates the miracles of the night. Rabbi Elazar HaKalir enumerates the miracles of Pesach, whether it's day or night. And you can see Rav Kalir's style is more complicated. So Yanai, Vayib Chatzi HaLaila is an easier piyut to translate than the Amartim Zebach Pesach. Okay, so you see on one hand, he is building on his Rebbe, but he's going in a different direction at the same time. Now the third edition is Kilo Noah Kilo Yoheh. To Hashem is fitting.
It's the and, third or fourth?
This is the third. Nirtza.
Those two are
separate. It's the fourth. Yeah. Nirtza is the first, Chazal is the second. V'amartim Zebach Pesach is the third. Kilo Noah is the fourth. This is anonymous. We don't know who wrote this, although it's pretty old. Once again, it's an Aleph Beis, but this is totally a praise of Hashem. Hashem is Adir, Hashem is Mighty, Hashem is Bachur, Hashem is Chosen, Hashem is surrounded with angels of glory. Right? This is all Shevach Lashem, because once again, Leil Pesach, we recognize the Geula is not from Malachim, the Geula is from Hashem, and therefore Hashem gets all the praise. The only Iker Kasha is the chorus. The chorus is a little obscure. Lecha ulecha, to you and to you. Lecha ki lecha, to you because it's you. Lecha af lecha, lecha Hashem amam lecha. And that's repeated. What is that? So actually, the Mefarshim say, and again, it just shows you the detailed allusions of Paitanim, and that is, these are shorthands for different psukim in Tehillim that refer to Hashem. Meaning, we're not quoting the whole pasuk. Lecha ulecha is a pasuk. Again, I'm sorry, I don't have the list of psukim here, but it's a pasuk that has the word lecha twice, praising Hashem. So, we give to you, Hashem, the pasuk that says lecha ulecha. We give to you a pasuk that says lecha, but again, these words are not adjacent. In other words, lecha ulecha, meaning lecha at the beginning, lecha in the middle. There may be 20 words in between them. Lecha ki lecha, lecha af lecha. In other words, these are psukim. So instead of stretching out the song by saying the whole pasuk, we just, like Reb Chaim Kineski now says, buha, you know that guy. Mm-hmm. used to give you bracha v'hatzlacha. That became too long. So it's buha. So this is the same thing, that this is an abbreviation. I'm sorry, I should have brought the list of the psukim. But that's the fourth one. Okay. The fifth one is Adir Hu, and this is the theme of Adir Hu is a very, very obvious theme. This is a direct prayer to Hashem to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And this in particular seems to have been considered to be the most important of the post-Seder songs. That's why in many Haggadahs you actually have it in Yiddish or German. Some even have an Arabic version for the Sephardim. Some have an Adir Hu also, and the like, because this was a very heartfelt song.
Who wrote it?
Anonymous. The rest of the Haggadah is going to be anonymous. We don't have any author for them. But as I say, Adir Hu seems to be the one that was taken most deeply by people, because they felt they wanted to express in their own language their yearnings for the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, the sixth one is the one thing. So again, I think we've shown how each song is connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, because obviously Leil Pesach, where we're looking to the Geula, we want encouragement through the struggles of the night. We want to understand that Pesach is the Zman of Geula. We want to affirm that Hashem is our Redeemer, and we want to pray for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Now, Echad Miyodea is a hard song to figure out exactly why it's here. It's numerology, right? Every number has a significance from 1 to 13. Now, some say this is a children's song to keep kids awake towards the end of the Seder. But it's not just entertainment. Obviously, there's an educational component, right? Another thing that's interesting is, and I don't have a complete answer to this, this song is a mixture. See, Chag Gadya is totally Aramaic. But Echad Miyodeya is a mixture of Hebrew and Aramaic. So, for example, Asara Miyodeya is Hebrew, right? Who knows 10? I know 10. Asara Dibraya, 10 are the 10 commandments. That's Aramaic, right? Yarchei Leida, Yimei Mila is Hebrew. Yimei Shabbat is Aramaic. Right? It's not clear why there's an inconsistency. But I will tell you generally, and this will be true for Chag Gadya as well, the Maggid began with Aramaic, and it ends with Aramaic, or the Haggadah ends with Aramaic. And I think I told you, B'Shem Rav Avadya Yosef, that Aramaic is a language that the Malachim don't understand. So we begin and end with Aramaic to say, tonight, I am only connected to Hashem. So even though most of the Haggadah we say B'Lashon HaKodesh, but we begin and end it in Aramaic to make that connection. But why there's a mixture of it, that I don't know. And its exact place is not entirely clear. So this is something you can think about, I can think about, and maybe come up with an explanation. But what I want to end with Chag Gadya. And Chag Gadya is totally in Aramaic, for the reason that I just said. There's an interesting story. You know, Sfardim don't have Chag Gadya. It's an Ashkenazic piyut, anonymous authorship, but we first find it in the Sefer HaRokeach, which goes back to the 1100s. So it's very, very old, Chag Gadya. But Sfardim don't have it. So the Chidah recounts that there was a certain Sephardic person who made fun of Ashkenazim for reading these children's nursery rhymes, Leil Seder. And a Sephardic Chacham said this was disrespectful to Minhagei Yisrael, so he put the guy in Cheirim. So the person complained to the Chidah. He says, what am I putting him in Cheirim for? I said the truth. The Chidah said, the Chacham was right to put you in Cheirim, because you cannot denigrate the sacred Minhagim of Yisrael.
Wow.
And the Chidah says, because Chag Gadya is Kodesh Kedoshim, even though there's no chiv to say it, right? You're not chiv to say it. And the Vilna Gaon wrote no fewer than 10 interpretations of Chag Gadya. In fact, there's a say I saw just now, I don't have it. I saw an advertisement for a new Sefer on Pesach that offers 48 interpretations of Chag Gadya.
Wow.
It's a good advertisement. It says, looking for a pshat at Chag Gadya? How about 48 of them? I think it's a little bit of an overload. I find myself that I can't keep more than maybe 3 in my mind at a maximum. But I'm only going to give you one. I just want to give you one. Because it's a very, very powerful pshat. Now the general idea, first let me give you the general idea of Chag Gadya. The general idea of Chag Gadya is to show that life has ups and downs. The simplest pshat is the kid, the goat, are the Jewish people that are often described as a sheep or a goat surrounded by 70 wolves. And things happen to this goat. This goat gets eaten. But Chag Gadya says, yeah, but the bad guys get punished, and life has ups and downs and ups and downs. But eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come in and make everything right. And that's how we're ending the Seder. That, yeah, a lot of things change. Life has dislocations. But eventually, we are maimin bi'amuna shalema, that everything will be okay. A Rav once said that Chag Gadya is like, or life rather, is like an EKG. That is, if it goes up and down, you're okay. If it's flatline, you know, you're dead. So, you know, life has to have these ups and downs. In that way. So let me give you one. We don't have all 10 pshatim of the Vilna Gaon, but in the Gaon's Haggadah, we do have a hesber from the Vilna Gaon on Chag Gadya that I want to share with you. First of all, he has an interesting pshat. He learns Chag Gadya doesn't mean There's one goat that we just repeat the word twice. He says there are two goats. Chad Gadya, there's one goat and there's another goat. So he understands the scenario. There are two goats that are here. Although it's a little schwer because when it talks about the Shunri, it says, Ochlo the Gadya. According to the Gra, there are two goats here. But okay, putting that kasha aside, he says the following. He says a Yisait that all of the brachos that Klal Yisrael have in this world and in Olam Haba, in the Yimos HaMashiach, are only because Yitzchak gave the brachos to Yaakov. If Yitzchak would have given the brachos to Esav, we would have nothing at all.
Wow.
What was the mechanism by which Yaakov acquired the brachos? The two goats that he brought to Yitzchak Avinu. Mm-hmm. Now, so the two goats are the source, the Zovin Abba, that our father Yaakov bought.
Oh.
Now, he bought it with two Zuzim. What are the two Zuzim? Here the Gra says, Zuzim of course literally means two coins, two Zuz, but he says that what entitled Yaakov to get the brachos was many, many years earlier, Esav despised his birthright, which was a spiritual heritage. And he was willing to sell his birthright to Yaakov for two things, bread and lentils, lechem unezid adashim. And by selling his birthright, Esav demonstrated he did not care for ruchnius, he did not care for kedusha. And that is why in Shamayim, Yaakov was entitled to bring the two goats to Yitzchak to get the bracha. So, Chad Gadya, Chad Gadya, the two goats which gave got us the brachos from Yitzchak were purchased by our father Yaakov with the lechem and the zid adashim that he had given Esav, showing that Esav didn't care about ruchnius. What a wonderful thing. This is how we have brachos. This is how we have Yeshua. But what happened is we messed up. The cat came and ate up the goat, meaning we lost the brachos. Now, how is that? So he says, like it says, Shudra, although it means cats, and that's the imagery that's being used, can also be read as an abbreviation of Sonei Ra, an evil hatred. And the evil hatred of the Jews were Mechiras Yosef. By the Sinas Chinam they had in Mechiras Yosef, we now had to suffer the Gullus in Mitzrayim. So we lost those brachos. The cat, as it were, the sinas chinam, ate up the goats. And what happened? The dog, now he brings a number of psukim that Mitzrayim is called the kelev. So the dog came and took the cat, took the hatred of the brothers, and made them avodim. Right? So the shunra is the sinas chinam of Mechiras Yosef. The kalba is Mitzrayim. The chutra, the stick came and beat the dog. The stick was the mata of Moshe Rabbeinu, from which there was Yitzias Mitzrayim. So Baruch Hashem, the stick beat the dog, allowing us to get out. Now, the Gra says, the zechus of Moshe Rabbeinu and the mata lasted even after Moshe Rabbeinu died. That somehow the hashpah that Moshe Rabbeinu brought into the world helped us in Eretz Yisrael for hundreds and hundreds of years. But eventually, a fire came and destroyed the zechus of the staff. And this refers, the Vilna Gaon says, to the yetzer hara of idolatry, which was the main avera that caused the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And today we don't understand that Yetzer Hara, but that Yetzer Hara was like a burning fire that was not controllable. And that destroyed the staff, meaning we no longer had the merit of Moshe to keep us in Eretz Yisrael. And fire is a double entendre. It both refers to the fire of the Yetzer Hara and the fire that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the physical fire. Right? Now, what happens? Now, even though it's true, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because of Avodah Zarah, Gilui Araya, Shfichas Shtamim. But the primary Avera was Avodah Zarah. Was Avodah Zarah. Now, 70 years later, the second Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt. And the Anshei Knesset HaGdola under Ezra asked Hashem for a very unusual request. They asked Hashem to take away the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. Now that's a very rare thing, because Hashem wants us to have free will. But the prayer was answered. We lost, because they argued that the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah was so strong that we couldn't control ourselves. So it was taken away. And that is why we don't have that Yetzer Hara anymore. That is described as a water that extinguished the fire. If the fire is the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, the water is the action of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola in putting out that fire so it can no longer be destructive. But there's something much deeper here. And that is, losing the Yetzer Hara of idolatry had a major, major cost for us. It was, as you might call it, a spiritual lobotomy of sorts. And that is, the Rambam writes that the origin of the impulse to idolatry was we were so overwhelmed with the greatness of Hashem that we thought we were not worthy to pray to Hashem, so we prayed to the subordinates. That turned out to be a very bad thing. So what did taking away the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah mean? We no longer have that same sense of awe. Meaning, you come to Shul to Daven. How many people are quaking and shaking and says, how can I come to Hashem? How can I Daven? There may be a lot of reasons why we come to Shul late or stay in bed. But I would dare say that for most people, it's not because I am so in awe of the Ribono Shel Olam. I am frightened to walk into the Shul. We lost that. And we lost that because we no longer have the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. So for us, I don't have, my feeling is not the same. That's why, by the way, the loss of prophecy correlates with the loss of the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah, because both of them are a spiritual ecstasy. Except one went in the wrong direction, one goes in the right direction. But be it as it may, this is the water. So Baruch Hashem, that did allow the second temple to exist. But eventually the ox came and drank up the water. The ox, the Vilna Gaon shows, shor, Torah is the Aramaic for shor, is a remez to Esav that is called the shor. And who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash? Esav, the Romans, the Bnei Edom. And it's also true that Yosef is also called the shor. So what's interesting is, the chet of Mechiras Yosef was Sinas Chinam, right? They destroyed the shor. What was the chet of the Bayesheni? Sinas Chinam. Mm-hmm. So the shor comes back to haunt them, right? And that is the shor. So now it turns out, we're up to the Chorban Bayesheni. The shor destroys the second temple. So who is the shochet? The shochet is the enigmatic Moshiach ben Yosef. That when it's time for the redemption, there will be the Moshiach, the son of Yosef, whose job it is to destroy the power of evil in the world, to pave the way for Moshiach ben David. But Moshiach ben Yosef will die in the war of Gog and Magog. So the Malach HaMavis is going to get Moshiach ben Yosef. But at the end, Hashem will come and bring Moshiach ben David. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So this is how the Vilna Gaon understands Chad Gadya. And then, that's why we repeat Chad Gadya, right? We repeat the whole thing at the end. Because the idea is that when Moshiach ben David comes, we will get the brachos that Yaakov bought by getting the two goats that he gave to Yitzhak, and all of that will come back to us. Okay, and therefore you end the Seder with the affirmation that there will be a Geula. We're not just talking about the past. There will be a Geula from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, it's very notable that even though the last stanza is referring to Mashiach ben David, it doesn't mention Mashiach ben David. It only says Hashem, because Mashiach ben David is simply the Shaliach of Hashem, but really it's Hashem. Hashem is the Redeemer. That's why I don't like, I, you know, the Chabad thing. Putting aside the issue of whether the Rebbe is Mashiach, that's a separate question. But what I don't like in particular is they sing, Hu Yigolenu, He will redeem us. That is not proper even about the real Mashiach. Hu Yigolenu is referring to Hashem redeeming us. You don't say even about Mashiach, Hu Yigolenu. Okay? And that's what Chagat is bringing out. In the last stanza about Mashiach, it's Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come. Okay? So this is it. And, at this point, many people read Shir HaShirim, which is a good thing to do. Shir HaShirim is the story of love between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. And Leil Pesach is a night of great love and revealed love. And therefore it is appropriate to read Shir HaShirim. And Halacha even says one should also continue discussing the Yetzias Mitzrayim until they can no longer stay awake, which, you know, for most of us, that's a relatively short time anyway, but still, you try to keep it going a little bit. Okay, anyway, I wish you all a Chag Kashuv Sameach, a good Zon Yom Tov, and may it be a Zman of Geula B'Yeshua for all of us. Okay.